We had, it looks like we have a number of people who couldn't make it today. So I was kind of sitting around by my lonesome and,
Oh no.
waiting for the phone to ring, and I got over it.
Sure, you have plenty to do.
I was definitely busy working away, but I thought I'd stay on just in case we had late arrivals, and we can just jump in. So glad. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
It's up and down, up and down, up and down. I'll have good moments, and then all of a sudden the bottom will fall out, and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like PSD or some PTS, what is PS PTSD?
PTSD.
I don't know. I just want the ship to start steadying out, and that's really, I feel like I'm the nice boss, and that's what my problem is. But
Yes.
anytime I try to exert anything more, then I'm quickly labeled something else. You know,
I understand. Yes. And so you have a couple of forces against you that are difficult. One is women are, of course, not allowed to have hard conversations without you have a more delicate line to walk before both men and women judge women, right? It's not just men that judge that, it's women too. So the other thing you have is kind of the nonprofit, which is there is a higher sensitivity to niceness and a desire for it, and a desire for compassion and ease and grace. So have you watched the Hard Conversations training?
I have. I dove really into, I'm trying to put all the pieces together. I'm almost through four, as far as getting through all of that. I definitely think, you know, I have to look at myself, and there's a lot of things, you know, as far as doing the work that I've done. I think that there still is just some missing gaps that ultimately was what's making that, when I'm having an issue, looking back at myself first and looking at what you've put in there, going, okay, there's a few things in there I either need to polish or I need to address. And so I'm trying to piece it all together. You had a I think at the as an end of two or in or sometime in three where you're talking about the unsaid conversations.
Yes.
And that I've kind of just kind of mulled around. Old me would have jumped right in and been, you know, okay, we're gonna deal with this right here and now. But the consequences of an unsaid conversation that I have unsaid right now could have ramifications that I don't know that I want. So I'm trying to decide whether or not it's the risk is worth having the conversation with. But I think it's still ultimately it's always going to be out there.
Can you give me
And
just 1 second? I just have something else to take care of. Give me just 1 second. Okay, my apologies. Go ahead. So you're saying there's this unsaid conversation that you feel like if you have it, it's going to cause problems. And that's a valid thing. Like, I'm not saying that every time there's an unsaid conversation, you need to rush right out and have it. But I do think that for you still have kind of a larger cultural issue, which is it's a combination of who you attract and then how you reward them as they are in your system. So one of the things that I would say that would probably need to start happening is you probably have a culture that has been built over a long period of time, and it takes a lot of consistent, repeated behavior over a long period of time to get a new culture. And often when you do that, you're going to experience more turnover initially, because there's going to be people in the system that don't want to be a part of that culture because they signed up for the other culture where they're allowed to do whatever they want and there are no consequences. And they like that culture better. And that's fine. You should let them go because they're not actually good for your organization. And the next, if you continue to do consistently different behaviors, for example, including rewarding people. So for example, there are organizations that that I've worked with that are either low on creativity, or maybe they're low on accountability. Their culture just doesn't like accountability, or their culture isn't very creative, and their business requires creativity, or their business requires accountability. What I will do is we will have that leader begin to institute that values recognition that we've talked about, using right. just that one value for like 2 months straight. Just that one value that you most want, that one behavior that you care most about. And each week you recognize somebody for them demonstrating that amazing behavior mm-hmm. and that you appreciate it. And so I don't know if it's grit. I don't know if it's resilience. I don't know what the word is, but it's something in your culture that you want to have more of that mm-hmm. you aren't seeing. And then right. the second thing that has to happen, that's going to happen consistently and repeatedly over time. And you should be prepared for people to leave. That's something you'll need to prepare yourself for. If you're truly going to, because what I'm getting the impression after working with you for this time is that I think you've been instituting some of these things, but it hasn't moved the needle much. And I think the reason it hasn't moved the needle much is probably because, without me being there to assess what's going on, it's probably because the culture is now entrenched and it's the people who are working for you, not all of them, just a certain subset. And my guess is you could probably identify who are those people that I know are not contributing to the culture that we're trying to create. And I know that the highest performing companies in the world, they will fire top performers if they aren't a culture fit. And that's the most highest discipline thing that can be done, is to say, I'm going to be ruthless about ensuring that our culture is expressed and maintained, because that's like a 401k program. When you have powerful culture that people want to be a part of, that is really positive, you actually have like a 401k plan. You're going to have an easier time attracting talent. You're going to have an easier time retaining talent. That is going to happen increasingly. Now, I would say that what the other thing that has to happen is, you've got to be consistent. You personally have to be consistently holding people accountable when they do things that don't work for the system. And the way you do it is you, which I know you know how to do, you just remind people, I'm here to protect all of you and our kids. And if one of us steps out of line and doesn't show up and isn't there when we need them, they don't belong on this team. And that really is kind of, you want to kind of take a lesson from like the Navy SEALs, right? The Navy SEALs, they have an incredibly strict selection process. And the reason they're so strict about it is because if one man falls down, people die. And so it's a really, really high stakes system. And so there's this incredibly high expectation that you will give your life before you let your team members down. That's, you know, it's an extreme example. But you are dealing with kids who have been, I think, traumatized, who are in very high risk situations or very difficult situations. And so your task is to begin to learn to develop that strength and power that says, I'm going to ensure that every one of us on this team is held accountable for the sake of these kids. And because all of you deserve it, because all of you are showing up, I owe it to you to protect all of you. Now, I'm not saying those are the exact words you need to say. I'm just trying to give you a pretty disruptive frame for you to start thinking a little bit.
Talk to me about, you say in there that accountability and responsibility and authority, that you've got to have authority and accountability, you have to be together.
Yep.
So I have issues where teachers, they have procedures they're supposed to follow. They have tasks that they're supposed to do. And, you know, sometimes they take the authority to change them or to disregard them. And so they have the authority to create the lesson plan, as long as it meets, you know, the appropriate measures. They have plenty of leeway, but they don't have the leeway to change a procedure, or to alter a procedure. So, in being said, I'm trying to process what authority do they have so that they're held accountable for that authority.
Let me dig in on that 1 minute. I'm so sorry. I'm in the middle of like a little crisis. I just got to manage it again. Hang on 1 second. So sorry about that. Okay. So you're talking about wanting to make sure that the authority and the accountability matches so that you can actually hold people accountable. I mean, one thing you're talking about here is more about this isn't so much about authority. This is just about you are here to serve these kids. Here is the policy that we have in place to protect the kids and the other people that work with and for us. If you do not uphold these particular policies, we have a zero tolerance policy, which means it's an immediate termination. This is creating clear boundaries for people. There may be other things that you can have leeway and like, you do that 3 times and you're out, but like there are certain things that you should put in place that just let people know, like, we do not mess around with this. This is really serious stuff. And, in the same way that the Navy SEALs go to war, and if one person just decides, you know what, I'm feeling not well today, I'm gonna let you guys handle it, people die. Like, that's really serious. And so they just would never, ever consider entertaining that. Now, that's a culture, right? Your culture is the exact opposite, which is we're all just friendly and warm and we're here to care for people. I love that. It's a beautiful thing. It's why most people start nonprofits, but it is an unsustainable thing. And if you look at your energy, you are suffering. You continue to suffer in ways that you don't have to suffer. You will have to do a short, and what I was trying to do with you is I was trying to see, could we just tweak a few things? Could we adjust a few dials and see if we get results? What I'm seeing is adjusting all the levers that we've been working on, they're not getting results, which is okay. That happens sometimes. It just means you're going to have to shift pretty dramatically your way of leading, and you're going to then lose people. So you want to be prepared for that. You have the, and that really is the kind of the fork in the road I think you're at, which is you're either going to continue to kind of just manage these hard things. Or you're going to say, I'm gonna do something pretty significant. I'm gonna do a pretty significant intervention, and I'm gonna set new policies, and I'm gonna watch people leave who don't want to be here anymore because they didn't sign up for that, and that's fine. And we'll do everything we can in a very difficult period of time to get new people. But when those new people come on, we make really clear, this is who we are, this is what we expect, and here are the consequences if we don't do that. And we don't do that because we're just hard, mean people. We do that because we love the people that serve our kids, and we love our kids. And we expect that of each other because we're dealing with kids' lives. And that's an essential part of this work. If you can't sign up for that, no problem. We wish you well. We want you here only if you can be a part of that. And so you attach that hard line to the soft mission, and you show people how the hard line serves this mission even better. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Do you want
There's
to push
no doubt.
back on it, ask any questions?
Well, a couple of things. Like, I have a teacher moved here from Florida. She's not been here very long. When she seems to get overwhelmed, she seems to just, I don't know. Just get out of control. And the fact that, oh, I'm going to quit. I'm this is crazy. No, I didn't sign up for this. I'm not going to be here tomorrow. And of course, then she just kind of just scares everybody. And then of course, then she calms down and she just goes from really high production to real low and just crashes. And she's expressed that in the past she's been on medicine. I've talked to her and said, well, can we get you to the doctor? What can we do? Because this is becoming an issue. Again, today, a child threw up. I sent the floor supervisor out to help her. The floor supervisor is feeling some feelings towards her because she's just the lady's pretty much offended everybody here. And so the floor supervisor should have done more than she did. But the teacher started coming at her like, you need to do this and you need to do that. And in Florida, this and in Florida, that. And so basically the floor supervisor comes to get me to go handle it. The child just threw up, Shane. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, right.
We clean it up. We call the parent. We move on. It's not, yeah. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, why are we making it into something? Of course, the teacher's like, well, I think that the office should have called the parent. Yes, we ask the teachers to call the parent because they're going to ask us questions that we don't know. You know, I want to know you're calling a parent, but they're going to ask me something and I'm going to look like an idiot and go, well, I don't know. The teacher just told me that he just threw up. I didn't see him throw up. I don't know what happened. So you need to be the one to call her to give her the information. That doesn't need to happen in the middle of the child throwing up. Take a moment, get it all done. It's not a race, you know, and she was just getting flustered that she had to do all that so quickly. And so I went out and talked to her. You know, she seemed to understand, she calmed down, but then I'm dealing with the aftermath of the other teachers, you know, that she, here she is, she's going
this
up.
This is a perfect example of what you can no longer tolerate.
Okay.
And the way you do that is when you start seeing early signs of a person who you've repeatedly, and you know they're on medication, get that person out of there as soon as you have someone else to replace them. Okay. There, you should not have somebody who's on meds dealing with kids, period, full stop. I don't care how much experience they have. That is going to be very high risk. So
she's not on meds. She probably needs meds.
This is my point. Even if she's been on meds in the past and isn't, this is a very high risk. When you're dealing with kids, you want to be a gas station attendant, be my big guest. You want to be a construction worker, be my guest. You're dealing with kids. So, I mean, for you, you've got to take on the role. And I recommend you to read like a Navy SEAL commander book, really just to kind of get you in the headspace of, not like you're ever going to become that, but you've got to start to activate that part of you. That is, what is the guy's name? Jocko Wilkins, I think is his name. Let me just look it up and I'll put it in the chat. Hang on a minute. It's called Extreme Ownership. And I haven't read the whole book. I've read bits and pieces of it, but it's one of the greatest simple examples. Here, I've got it in the thing here. It's not going to be your style of book, right? But that's okay. Like what I need you to, you know how we talked about polarities? You know how we talk about polarities?
Uh-huh.
And we've been talking about the polarity between kind of compassion and accountability. You guys are stuck over here and you're experiencing all of the worst parts of being stuck over here. Uh-huh. This guy is stuck over here. And he probably experiences the worst parts of being stuck over here. But I'm telling you, you've got to sort of internalize your own. Jocko is a commander Navy SEAL who consults with business leaders now. And he's got a really hard edge kind of, this is the truth. You got to do that. It's not really my style, but I absolutely validate that polarity that he represents. I think it's excellent for certain people. Other people, it's just an illness, just makes it worse. With him, he needs a book that you write, you know, so that the two of you got to create the infinity loop.
Yeah.
Where there's this ongoing balance. And for you, I think you're just so stuck here, both because of your personality and because of the mission of the organization and because all the people you hired, you're stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to start to integrate some of that harder stuff. And you don't have to read the book, but I'm just saying, if you start reading it is, you'll start to get a feel for the energy and the rhythm of it. And that's what's been missing. So like everything you just told me, that is clear as day. I would immediately go out and start recruiting some other teacher. I wouldn't even tell you, I would just
I'm working on it. I just don't know that I can get it fast enough.
Sure. And so you got to make a hard decision here, which is, you know, as soon as you can get someone, great. If you can't, and it's still going on, then there maybe have to be a hard period of time where teachers have to take more kids. I don't know how the system works, but you know, there may be just a period where it's hard. And I think that's what I'm aware of for you, is that there is now going to be a period of hardship that will be temporary. Uh-huh. And if you can do it right and you can understand how to get yourself onto that place, It'll be a lot easier later. You'll just have people who understand it, people who accept it, and your culture will improve because people will feel good about it. What people love is if you're super compassionate to somebody who is destructive and hard on for them, they will resent you. That compassion begins to work against you. Uh-huh. And when you're hard on someone, they see it and they're like, okay, not hard on them for the wrong reason, but like you held them to the fire and you gave them a consequence and it was serious. They're put on notice, but they also see, wow, good. That's good. That's a serious leader. That's a leader who's not going to let people get away with things. They're going to take them to task. That means I could get taken to task, but I'm okay with that because I don't think I'm going to get taken to task. I'm going to show up and do what we've agreed we're going to do. And all you're doing right now is you're saying, hey, we formed an agreement and now I'm enforcing the agreement. That's all I'm doing. This has nothing to do with anything other than I understand you got sick. I understand your dad died. I understand all of that. And I'm really sorry all of that happened. But you violated the most critical agreement, which I told you in advance is the one agreement that we cannot tolerate. You made that mistake. I'm sorry for you. And we have to let you go or whatever it is. You know, I can give you 2 weeks. But the thing is, like, giving them 2 weeks doesn't seem like a point because most of the people come to you threatening all the time. Like, oh, I'm going to be gone tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going to be here. Fine. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff that I would just say, there's got to be a little bit more of that built in.
So I'm wanting to unpack something and I'm worried that you're going to see me. I don't think it's going to change your opinion of me. You know, becoming a stronger leader. I think the issue is, and I agree with what you said in your module, that when you get further along, you learn to know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I didn't think I didn't know half the stuff. And so I had a teacher that worked for me for 10 years, very devoted teacher. She really put us on the map just because she really, really made this place. And I will not do her justice by saying that she didn't. 1 year, I had an issue with a classroom that I kept having an issue with it. And she was my strongest teacher. So I moved her classroom and I said, you know, you're just my strongest teacher. And I can't get this other classroom straight. I can easily hire somebody for the older kids, but I'm having a hard time hiring somebody for this age group. So I'm going to swap you to this age group. Well, she did it out of respect, but she hated it. And it was awful. And there for a while, I didn't have all this turnover. And so I went and surveyed parents at our graduation afterwards and say, you know, which classroom was the best and which one was, you know, your least favorite. And the students that had her at that younger age absolutely named her as the worst teacher ever, just because she thought she had been demoted. And of course, I moved her back the next year because that just was a no-go. She wasn't performing well in that class because her head wasn't in it, her heart wasn't in it. So I moved her back and she did much better. She had some emotional issues where about every two months, you could almost put it on the calendar, Shane, where she was going to come in the office bawling, you know, just kind of just falling apart, you know, type thing. And just asking for more help and we would discuss it. And, you know, sometimes she left feeling like her needs were met and sometimes she left not feeling like her needs were met. Because some of the things she wanted changed just weren't able to be changed. Well, we went through this for about 10 years. And ultimately, at the end of 10 years, she decided to open up a licensed family daycare in her home. And we celebrated our 10-year anniversary. I had some other teachers that had been with me for 10 years. So I gave them all special plaques. Well, the only thing I said to the public or at that point was that we were going to miss her, that she would be leaving us. But I kept it very minor. She got offended that I didn't give her more recognition at that event. Well, she's leaving to go be my competition. So, no, I'm going to downplay it. She left. She got her feelings hurt. I tried to go see her to, we do a child nutrition program where we sponsor family daycares in it and centers in it. Went to go see her, had offered to help her set up to get licensed, whatever I could do. And she just basically told me, you know, I just think it's too soon. I'm like, well, what does that mean? And so obviously I had hurt her feelings somewhere. Well, it's now been probably 7 years. And occasionally we'll lose a couple of kids to her. The first year we had probably lost five kids to her just because she was leaving here and everybody knew her and so forth. So I have switching gears. I have a pre-K teacher. This pre-K teacher has worked with me for many, many years. She has been friends with that teacher. But that pre-K teacher and I actually finished our bachelor's degrees together. You know, we have a bond, to some degree. I'm still her boss, and it's definitely a boss, employee relationship, but you know, we've both grown together. And she has four grandchildren under the age two and under. And so her daughter had a little girl one February, another little girl the next February, and a set of twins the next February. So I'm on Facebook and just happened to see on Facebook this little thing on her daughter's Facebook page that her grandchild is at this teacher's family daycare home instead of being here. Well, the reason that's there's a couple of reasons why that's a problem for me. Number one, she's trying to enroll her other three children here, and I'm helping her get on the subsidy program because her daughter qualifies. In our conversation, she didn't want to move the elder child, who I especially have room for. The other ones I'm trying to make room for. She's kind of led me to believe that her mom, the great grandmother, is keeping her and just doesn't want her to come, which is a lie. You know, she's not with her mom. She's at this other woman's place. So I have loyalty is an issue for me. Being enough is an issue for me, and that is it's a, you know, do I have that conversation and say, hey, you know, I found out, you know, so and so is at so and so's house. To me, that says that we're not good enough. That tells me that you don't, you know, or am I going to make room and do all this for these younger children where I really don't have room and you're just going to take them over to her? She doesn't take them until they're two and a half. Other issue is I've been working with this pre-K teacher. Our pre-K programs in this county are
What is it that you're
oversaturated.
wanting? What is it you're wanting?
Well, a couple of things. I'd like to resolve whatever that issue is with that teacher that left.
Why would you like to do that?
Because I think she feels some way that she shouldn't feel, that I feel a certain way that she doesn't, I don't feel. Maybe she feels I
And
didn't
why
appreciate
is that? What would happen if that were changed? What would
probably
be the
nothing,
benefit?
probably nothing. But my biggest problem is that our pre-K, it's very competitive now to get children. The state has basically allowed too many people to have pre-K classrooms in our county. And so now everybody's kind of really, really trying to vie for people to come to their pre-K so that they'll be able to keep their grant. And like this year, we're supposed to have 18 kids, but we only have 12 in there.
So
So it's
then this woman has exactly zero incentive to make nice with you.
no, she
This
has no.
woman has every incentive to continue to keep that the way it is. So I would waste no more time or energy on that. I would put all of your time and energy into creating the most amazing school in the region so that everybody wants to go to your school.
Okay.
And it's that simple.
So you would just leave it, don't
there
talk
is
back.
no, I hear a few things going on that I think are really important for you as a leader. Uh-huh. One is, have you watched the Enneagram bonus, the bonus on the Enneagram types?
Not yet.
Ah, that's your next assignment.
Okay.
Watch the Enneagram bonus and pay particular attention to the type two.
Okay.
Because the two on the Enneagram is probably emblematic of your entire organization, as well as possibly you personally, and maybe many of the people you lead and many of the people you will attract will very likely possess a lot of two energy. So just write that, remember that, you don't have to write it down, but pay really close attention to the two. There, so much of what you're talking about is found in what's called the shadow of the personality, which is the two in us always needs to be understood. We hate being misunderstood. We also feel not good enough. We want to feel worthy, and we want to help. And that's how we feel worthy. And those things cause us to go off on rabbit trails, to expend lots of energy to try to get people to like us again who will never like us and don't need to like us. And there is no benefit to anybody if they do like us. That's not uncommon. So I'm seeing some of those tendencies in you reflected. I'm not saying that's what you are, but I think there's a lot in there that could be really useful. And so my encouragement to you for sure, and I really appreciate you kind of sharing vulnerably, like, look, I've got a thing around, you know, wanting to be understood, and I have a thing around not being enough. And I think at this point, those are things that you will be well served when you begin to heal those with yourself rather than expect others to do that for you. So instead of reaching out and hoping that someone will say words that will soothe you in this, free that person. Cut the cords, let them go. What's done is done. These things happen in life. It's not uncommon. And there's all kinds of reasons why that person isn't going to think highly of you that have nothing to do with you. It's not even about you. It's just about them. And you can't change the movie screen they're playing, no matter how hard you try. So don't try. Don't waste any energy on it. And begin to...
The other issue that I have is that you've got this particular woman. She's promoting the other program, the school program, to go to pre-K. So in my book, I'm going, well, why would you take your child there when this woman is not going to promote you as the teacher, the pre-K teacher, to send children back to you? She's not going to do that. So why are you sending your child there? But you're saying don't even have the conversation, pretend like I don't know, and just keep going.
Even if you do know, who cares? The reality is there is some very real reason that they're not sending their kid to your school. It doesn't sound like you're going to get answers for that. Even if you did get answers, it doesn't sound like you're going to get honest answers. So move on. You know, look, I was the pastor of a church, so I know what it is when people leave a church and go to another church. Uh-huh. I don't go chasing people. Like, I don't shame them for not coming to my church again. Okay, something in them didn't fit with this. No problem. I'm still doing what I'm going to do because I know it's the right thing I got to do. And if it's not a fit, it's not a fit. That's okay.
So what if somebody that worked for you went to a different church?
Happens all the time.
Does it?
Yes.
Okay.
All that's the time. Okay. Of course it's okay. It's inevitable. If you're in business long enough, people are going to leave and go to your competition. You don't even have to do anything wrong. It can literally just be, some of this isn't even right or wrong. Maybe you did do something wrong. I don't know. I'm just saying, in this instance, you're not going to get good data. You're not going to get good information. If they're not telling you, they don't want to tell you. You know, if I go probing why somebody left, they're going to give me some answer that just isn't real. Because the real reason might have been, you're a boring preacher. And I don't want to tell you you're a boring preacher, but I found you really boring. You know, because no one wants to say that. So I'm like, oh, you know, I just have a tie. It was my wife and my kids really wanted that. We had a better preschool, you know, whatever, right? There's all these things. So I think my real concern for you is that you are emotionally entangled in issues that really have no, I mean, I understand why they affect you, but this is part of your maturing as a leader. Is really good leaders will know, like, okay, something I can do now. I gotta let that go. I gotta bless them. I gotta free them to say, you are free to do whatever it is you want to do in the world. And it has no impact on me because I'm living my mission. And right now, my mission requires all of my energy, time, and talent to build a better culture. Because when you start building that new, fresh culture, and you have happier teachers, and you have more stable teachers, and you have more teachers that want to work with you, and you have a community that really loves being there, that is going to be felt with the kids. And that word is going to get out over time. If you can begin to create a culture that none of your competitors can create, which, by the way, the tools that I teach in my program, if you actually do them consistently, repeatedly over time, you will be able to do something none of your competitors can do. Because what I'm teaching you isn't personal. It's not, Lisa is a really great principal, and so that's why we want to go there. No, whether Lisa comes or goes, we have processes in place that build a culture that is impersonal, meaning there's no one person that is responsible for it. We as a community created it together, and it perpetuates beyond individuals who come in it. Whereas right now, it's really Lisa driven, and whatever Lisa does or thinks or feels, and if somebody new comes in, completely new organization is created. Your goal is to get to the point where you create something that if you step out, it perpetuates. And all of the tools and techniques that I show you in the program, if you go back and review some of those early modules, those are all designed to help you do that. And so that's my encouragement for you.
Thank you, Shane.
How does that sound?
I think it sounds honest. I appreciate it.
It sounds honest. How are you feeling after that moment of honesty?
I think that is a much, you know, takes the load off, if that makes sense. You know, so I appreciate it.
Good. It should take the load off. It should clarify and focus, and it should give you permission to not care about lots of things.
Well, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
Yes, that would be wonderful. I agree. Yeah.
Well, Bean, you've just been a great therapist today.
Yeah, sometimes what I do. I'm actually probably not a very good therapist. I'm a little too direct.
Well,
I'm efficient.
Well, that's what it takes, that's for sure. My husband, he will always say, you know, I don't know why you care so much. You're like, well, how can you not?
Yeah. I understand it. I get how you get entangled, but what's really interesting is once you're entangled, it's just automatic. And that's why I asked the question, what are you after? What are you going to achieve? What is the likelihood of that happening?
I mean, I think I'm ultimately after having the best preschool, having the best school. I'd love to see that you come back.
You know? And that has nothing to do with those people. Nothing. You want to get to the point where you're creating something that's so good that the word of mouth, everybody's just like, oh, this is the one you got to go to. Everybody says it's so great. Mm-hmm. And the only way you get there is with, you know, the emotional system. Everything you're doing is in the emotional system. And the emotional system, 80% of that, I mean, all behavior in organizations is governed by the emotional system. And all the things, all the levers that I teach in the program are designed to create a healthy, compelling emotional system that is consistently experienced. And it is 70% of that is the leader's responsibility. And I've given you the roadmap. I've shown you the tools. It's just a matter of starting to do that and hold yourself to it. And one of the things that's really critical in leadership that's so hard is I can give you all the tools, techniques, and everything that you need and levers. But if you haven't done some of the inner work as a leader, if you haven't become aware of your triggers, hooks, and roadblocks, those things won't work. But a lot don't.
There's no doubt. When you were talking about, you know, knowing how things make you feel physically, I'm like, I don't know that I focus on that. I don't know that I, you know, I mean, if I get upset, I mean, my stomach may knot up. But you know, it's not like I'm sitting here thinking about every feeling there is. But that's definitely something that I've just kind of would have to really focus more on.
All of that is essential, and really it is. I mean, that's where that there are practices throughout the program that are designed for that inner work. There are practices in the Enneagram that I talk a little bit about around what to do with this stuff. But the most important step for you as a leader is to start with non-judging awareness. Non-judging awareness is what allows transformation to happen in us. So here's the
So
difference.
give me an example.
Yeah, so here's the difference between judging awareness and non-judging awareness. If you walk into a room and you see that their table is overturned and there's coffee stain on the chair and the chair is an ugly color, and you walk in and you go, "Oh, this place is a mess. There's a coffee stain there. I got to get rid of that. I got to do this." You become overwhelmed. Non-judging awareness is what light does. If you walk into that same room and it's dark and you turn the light on, does the light have an opinion about anything it reveals?
No.
No. It has no opinion about where the table is or isn't. It has no opinion about a coffee stain. It has no opinion about a chair. It merely reveals what is. Once you have revealed what is, you have a choice. You can change it. You can ignore it. You can complain about it. You have a choice. Awareness introduces choice. If you leave the light off, there is no choice. And when the light is off, people operate off programmed patterns in their life. They are programmed on autopilot to repeat the same things because the light is off and they have no choice. The most powerful work you can do is to turn the light on without judging what you see. Now, everything I just said is what happens in the external environment, which is much easier. But let's say for a moment, I don't like I got into, I don't like my face. Let's say something terrible happened to it and it's disfigured, God forbid. Now, the back of my hand or the front of my hand, I have no opinion about. But my face, I find very, very disturbing. If you ask me, "Hey, Shane, look at your hand for a while. How hard is it for me to look at my hand when I have no feelings, when I have no judgment about my hand? I don't think it's amazing. I don't think it's terrible. It's just a hand. How hard is it for me to look at that, to study that?"
Right, that would be easy.
Easy. Now you tell me, "Shane, go look in the mirror and really just study your face. And actually, we want to take pictures. We want to do a photo shoot of your face." How hard would that be for me to accept?
Oh, I would think it'd be really hard.
Really hard, because there's a judgment attached to it. Anytime humans assess something as bad, we want to hide it. It's why we hide our fat under our shirts. We hide anything we don't like. Anything we think is bad, we hide. That is the equivalent of turning off the light.
So
So
you're coming.
what I'm, I'll just, oh, go ahead. I'll let you
My
interject.
clarification. You're coming into the room, you turn on the light, the table's turned over, there's coffee stain. You're saying that there's no judgment. So you're
The
what is
hardest
at that moment?
thing for you to do, for all of us humans to do, is to see parts of ourselves we have judged as bad. And so we hide them from ourselves. If you can just allow every part of you to be neutral, neither good nor bad, just a part of you that functions in the world a certain way, and it serves a purpose. Every part of you serves a purpose.
So would you say that the table turned over was neutral?
The table turned over, if you want to know whether it's neutral, ask the light.
Okay.
Ask the light every time what its opinion is on the table being turned over.
It doesn't have an opinion.
Exactly. That leaves choice up to you. The more you reduce your opinion, the more free you are to make choices. The more you say about yourself, well, that's a really bad part of me, and I need to not have that part of me, and that's a terrible part of me. That's a really ugly part of me, and I don't want that part of me. It's gone. It just goes into hiding, and then it continues to operate you like a puppet. Mm-hmm. But the moment you go, yeah, you know what? There's a part of me that just really can't stand being misunderstood. And there's a part of me that overgives and then resents people who don't give back to me. And there's a part of me that writes covert contracts that nobody even knows I've written, that they have signed, that they didn't know they signed, that is, if I give to you, you're going to give back to me in the same way. And then they don't, and now I'm really angry because they violated the contract that I wanted them to sign, but they didn't actually sign because they didn't even know I wrote a contract. I'm a really manipulative person. I'm actually quite deceptive. But I'm a nice person. I'm a kind person. I'm a giving person. How could I be manipulative? Maybe I'm both. What would it be like for me to look at myself and my manipulation? Could I tolerate that without judging it? Mm-hmm. Could I understand what its purpose was? Mm-hmm. So it's really just becoming, I'm not speaking about you. I'm just talking, that's an example of someone looking at themselves and maybe a quote unquote flaw. I'm just talking about a process in generic terms. Okay. You need to
hold on just a second, Shane.
I'm sorry. He's here. He knows where. I'm hoping it's just allergy. He said he's not going to
go get him and take him home. Okay.
And check on and make sure there's no fever or anything. All right.
All right, Shane.
Yeah. So what I'm talking about is actually very hard to do, but once you do it, change happens easily. And it's just this. Can you begin to see your patterns without judging them? Because the moment you do, this happens. You go from being totally identified with your pattern to being able to see your pattern. And in the moment of seeing, you have created this, a gap, just enough space for it to be a choice. You can remove it. You can use it. You don't have to. You need to go again? It's okay.
I'm good. We're done.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, nothing to apologize for. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I think that's, again, it takes a weight off of if you can think like that. It's just a matter of training your mind to think like that.
Yes. And so watch that Enneagram module.
Okay.
And really start to go easier on yourself. Start to observe patterns without trying to judge them and without even trying to change them. Just notice like, wow. This is interesting. I'm doing it this way. And then a great way to bring awareness is to read a little bit of that Jocko Wilkins book. I think it's Wilkin. Anyway, the extreme ownership.
I think you're right. I think that definitely plays a lot into here and the culture here. For example, yeah, I have an office assistant. She knows her job is to go into the classroom when needed. But if she gets called to the classroom, she's huffing and puffing. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, if you're being called in the classroom, it's because this, this, and this have all happened. So, yeah, you're going to be needed. at that point. It's not like you're the first line of defense. You're the third line of defense, if that's the case. So why would you be huffing at this point when you know that that's the issue, that, you know, we're not just willy-nilly taking you out of the office and putting you in a classroom? There's got to be a real need. So recognizing that there's a need should give validation, but it doesn't. You know, it's a loud, I gotta go do this, you know, type thing. And it's just like, you know, the floor manager, you know.
This is all symptoms of the same thing.
It is.
It's so awesome. We can go through example after example after example.
Exactly, symptoms of the same thing.
And so this is why I'm saying, and I'm saying that I want to finish the thought I had, which was, okay, if you read even just a sample chapter on Amazon and you read the tone and the feel and the texture of that character, that character, I want you to periodically ask the question, what would Jocko do in this situation? Mm-hmm. Not because you have to do it, but because it will shine a light on the fact that there are other ways to do things than the habituated patterned way that you are now responding in your work life, mm-hmm, which is why you have perpetuated the same exact culture. Your culture is an extension of both your gifts and your shadows. Mm-hmm. And now is your chance to become more awake to those in yourself and to begin to see how you can awaken them in your organization and begin to shift them. And so I gave you a very practical technique, which is ask yourself the question. Once you have a feel for that guy, you actually know kind of how he thinks and talks, and imagine that. I've had people do it, or there may be people in your life who you respect, but they're very different from you. And you notice that they don't tolerate anywhere near what you tolerate. Uh-huh. And instead of you making that like a heroic trait of yourself, what if it's just a neutral trait of yourself that you tolerate these things? And what if their trait is neutral? And now you have a choice versus going, well, that's uncaring. Not necessarily. Might be the most caring thing he can do. Uh-huh. Jocko was trained that way to save lives, literally save lives. Everything he's doing is from a place of compassion. It may not look like compassion, but that's the point, is that I just want you to start to kind of get into your cells. There are different ways that this can go. And I've got a really strong habituated pattern.
So, oh, yeah.
I feel like there's a certain amount of time that I work with someone that I feel like I've filled them up to the brim. I think you're full to the brim. So
yeah, I'm good to go. I'm going to go check out that Enneagram and give you some feedback.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Pleasure talking with you. Reach out if you need anything, and we'll see you next week. Okay.
Right. Thank you, Shane.
Thanks so much.
Bye.